Today is January 24th, 2018, and this is episode number 446 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Pippi Longstocking. God, I still can't do it. Whatever, I'm Brian too. Goodness gracious. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. See, I had this title and it's supposed to be on Pippi Longstocking. I still can't say it. And then I screwed up, so we start over. And so then I'm going to, like, I still want to get a laugh out of Jeff. So I just instead announce that as my name and I still mess it up.
And you got a laugh out of me.
If you'd like to comment on question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acmaxover.com. Write us up. Actually, you know what you can do? This is what you should do.
Help Brian with his titles?
Nope. Yes. Yes.
No.
Yes.
Okay.
And you could do that at Facebook.
I think that's a great idea.
We have a group there. So you can, like, you know, chime in. Talk to us. Tell us what you think. Suggest things for us to talk about on the show. Tell us why we're wrong about the things we do talk about. And that's at facebook.com/groups/contextmachine.
And on the rare occasion when we're right about something, let us know too.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not going to happen very often.
No. And don't make a big thing out of it because it'll totally go to our heads. Facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. Is that it?
Yep. That's
sweet.
It.
Sweet.
That is it. All right. So listen, I heard you wrote this up for us.
Oh, good. I can't wait to hear what it is.
That there is a 13-inch MacBook coming. Is this a true thing?
Well, it's not confirmed. Okay, here's what we know. There is a display provider that Apple has been working with since at least last year, and I believe it's GIS, and so they are taking orders for 13-inch displays for what's supposed to be a new MacBook for Apple coming out sometime in the second half of the year. So Apple hasn't confirmed it, but this is the tapestry everyone is weaving from the supply chain.
Okay.
And it seems plausible that Apple is working on new computers and that a new MacBook model will come out at some point. And 13 inches seems like a nice size display for that. So I'm totally up for this.
Well, I mean, sure. I mean, it's weird that going from a 12-inch to a 13-inch. Do we know if this is a replacement or an addition to?
We don't know. A lot of people are speculating that this will replace the MacBook Air. And I could see why people would say that.
That would make sense from a form factor standpoint. It doesn't make sense from a cost standpoint.
Right.
I mean, of course, it doesn't. That also doesn't make sense that the MacBook Air is still sold, but okay, going to be positive.
So, Brian, what if this is a MacBook Air update? What if the 13-inch screen is so that Apple can finally give us a nice rev for the Air? I think it still has a good place in Apple's product lineup if it gets a refresh.
The problem with the Air is that it is the least expensive laptop that Apple sells. Mm-hmm. And if Apple wants to sell laptops to students, which, you know, I think I believe you agree with me here that selling to students brings with it a sort of, you know, lifting from below boost to Apple's overall ecosystem.
Sure. Yes. If you have students using Apple products today, when they go out into the workforce, that's what they're familiar with. That's what they're comfortable with. That's what they're going to want to use there.
Right. Right. And I mean, you know, and the reality is that, was it me and John that talked about this on PopCorn, or was it you and me talking about the fact that that clearly iPhone itself is the gateway to the Apple ecosystem.
I think that was you and John.
So iPhone is increasingly becoming Apple's ecosystem. And I think that Apple sees the writing on the wall for a day when fewer and fewer people need computers, want computers. And I think it's especially true for young people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we've seen so much of an emphasis on iOS and iPhone, I think, over the last several years. And iPhone, for you know, young people that want an iPhone, they're in the Apple ecosystem, and they don't need, you know, let me put this a different way. Macs are not the leading introduction to Apple's ecosystem for young people today. iPhone is.
I think that's a safe assumption.
iPad to a lesser extent. As a matter of fact, probably, well, Apple does sell a lot more iPads than it sells Macs.
Yeah, so you could generalize and say iOS is the entry for young people today.
Right. So it's not like Apple needs cheap laptops to be able to bring young people into the ecosystem.
No, what they think are powerful tablets.
I don't know. Well, okay, well, now you're going to push me in the other direction because there are lots of great things you can do with an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
But there are lots of things for which a keyboard and mouse are still superior.
All right, so
our keyboard and trackpad.
Yeah, how about keyboard and pointing device?
Pointing device, exactly.
So, because your pedantry rubs off on me every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here's where I was going with that. iPad or iPad Pro with an external keyboard and touch device.
No. Listen, an external keyboard for iPad as it is today is an improvement for typing on an iPad without an external keyboard, but it's no substitute for a laptop. For typing and doing typing intensive activities.
Not for everyone, but look at what we have today with the iPad lineup, and look at what Apple's been doing with iOS 11. So put these pieces together, and what it tells me is Apple is looking at the people coming into the ecosystem and the people that don't necessarily need a desktop or laptop computer. So how can they give them a tablet that meets all of their needs up to the point where someone's like, actually, no, I really do need a desktop or laptop computer, which for some people will never happen.
Okay, well,
this is like the beginning of that, I think.
Looking at the bigger picture, mm-hmm. I think that Apple is going to eat its words and eventually give us a toaster fridge.
And the toaster fridge you're talking about is like a hybrid laptop iOS device, right?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to be a macOS device that's touchable or an iOS device that is pointing deviceable. I don't know which it's going to be. Or if it's going to be a device that, you know, folded one way, it's running macOS, and folded another way, it's running iOS. I don't know what Apple's going to do, but I think eventually Apple is going to eat Tim Cook's words about toaster fridges and give us a toaster fridge. And my biggest evidence, I have two pieces of evidence for this.
Okay.
One is that toaster fridges are proving very popular on the Windows side. The Surface is doing pretty well. And people who like Surfaces really like Surfaces. And that includes people that I know who also like Apple devices. So they're not just like Windows fanboys.
Mm-hmm.
Evidence number two, Tim hasn't said anything about toaster fridges in years.
Oh, wow. You're right. He hasn't. Interesting. Right?
He hasn't complained about them. Hasn't denigrated. Maybe it's just because he hasn't been asked about it. But the fact that Apple isn't still bagging on toaster fridges says to me that they realized that they were wrong and that a toaster fridge is in our future.
All right. Well,
and it's probably going to be, let me say this one last thing. I know I keep cutting you off. I'm sorry. I'm kind of hyper today. It's going to be a better toaster fridge than anything Microsoft has ever managed.
Of course.
It's going to be the iPod video equivalent of, well, we solved the problems.
which Apple does all the time. This Apple is part of the modus operandi.
Yeah, it was part of Steve Jobs' modus operandi, and less so with under Tim, I think. But I think that that's how they would handle this sort of thing. As a matter of fact, you could even say that the smart keyboard and iPad Pro and Apple's advertisements for that are already the acknowledgement that they were wrong about toaster fridges. You could argue that, but I think we need more. I don't think that. I got to put it this way. An iPad Pro with a keyboard is way better for typing than an iPad Pro without a keyboard, but it's still no substitute for a laptop for a lot of file manipulation and typing intensive activities.
I will grant you that. And at the same time, I will say that I'm seeing more people when I'm out and about hanging in coffee shops where a tablet device is their primary computer now. So I think for a segment of the market, a tablet is totally acceptable in current form factors. And as the products evolve, that's going to become true for even more people. And I think we've already seen Apple Telegraph, the pointing device, coming to iOS because they've given us Apple Pencil. You can waffle on this one, but I'm totally right. Apple Pencil is Apple's first pointing device.
Apple Pencil is not a pointing device. It's not a pointing device, man.
All right.
Apple Pencil is unlike every other stylus on the planet.
It is. And at the same time,
Apple uses it in a ways that no other operating system uses a stylus.
They use it. I'm trying to figure out how to properly fit the word "in addition" in there because the way they are using Apple Pencil as an artistic tool is unlike the way other operating system makers are doing this. But the number of people that I see out in public with iPads where they are using their Apple Pencil as a navigation device, they're tapping on the screen, they're sliding with it. The number is higher than I expected. So
yeah. All right.
Yeah. So Apple is not presenting the Apple Pencil as a pointing device. They're presenting it as an artistic tool. And as a business tool, but it also is a fully capable pointing device.
Man, I don't want to sit there and type on my smart keyboard and then stop typing and lift the pencil and move the pencil over to the display. And I mean, that's crazy.
Of course it is. But I think it's Apple telegraphing where they're heading with this. Apple Pencil is their first pointing device, and its primary purpose is to be a business and artistic tool.
It's not. It's not going. No,
you are totally welcome to disagree with me. I embrace your wrongness. It's just the first step. Later on, we will have pointing devices that fit into the more traditional realm, like trackpads. I think it's just a matter of
maybe. I don't think it's related to Apple Pencil. If that happens, it's just not related to Apple Pencil.
Well, that's an easy out for you, and I'll let you have it. But I'm right.
So one way or another, I wonder how much of this practical effect that you're purchasing, and it's anecdotal to be sure.
Of course,
right? I mean, like here in Silicon Valley, I see laptops. I see a lot of Apple laptops.
It totally makes sense. I mean, even though I'm in a high tech
market, but that's anecdotal too.
I'm in a market where there's a lot of people that are using these devices in different ways out in public than what you're seeing in Silicon Valley.
Absolutely, and we're both living in weird bubbles.
Boy, howdy!
In America, Boulder and Silicon Valley are both their own different bubbles.
They're magical places.
But that's beside the point, too. How much of this anecdotal thing that we're seeing is because Apple has abandoned the MacBook Air? Like if Apple were still making. So like if you look at the two biggest differences in MacBook and MacBook Air are price and the Retina display.
Mm-hmm.
If Retina displays are still expensive enough that Apple can't offer an inexpensive device with a Retina display, then the Mac, you know, then keeping the MacBook Air updated and current would still allow Apple to be able to offer a quality laptop that they can make a profit from. And if they were doing that, how much would that affect the mix of devices that you're seeing?
That's a really good question.
We don't know the answer. We can't know the answer, really.
No. I'm sure for some people, they'd get all hot and bothered and really want the laptop. And other people would be all about sticking with the tablet because for whatever they're doing, it's the right tool. But yeah, it would be interesting to see. What we need is to be able to A-B our universe.
Yes. That would be fantastic. Okay, now let's look at the current MacBook line. Current MacBook line has a ridiculous Core M3 1.2 gigahertz processor. It's dual core. It's a dual core processor. That's ridiculous. Ridiculous bad.
Okay, I was going to ask for clarification.
And that's $1,299. Right? For $1,600, you can get a 1.3 gigahertz dual core i5.
Okay.
It's crazy expensive. It's just crazy expensive compared to other devices out there. And yeah, it's super thin and that's really cool. But this kind of comes back to like one of the things I say about like iPhone, like people aren't saying like, you know, golly, I'd get an iPhone if it was only a little bit thinner. no one's saying that. And the MacBook is, you know, like John Keat has argued that, the iMac Pro should be called the iMac Edition, right? Like mm-hmm. Apple Watch Edition. So mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's a fancy one that executives might want. And I agree with that to a certain extent. And like if MacBook was called MacBook Edition, I would get it, you know, thin, it's thin. It's super, super thin. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's super thin and sexy and, you know, it looks expensive. And that's great. But, you know, the funny thing to me is that my 2011 MacBook Air still looks great. 6 years old, and it still looks stylish and attractive. Mm-hmm. Of course, maybe that's because the body style is still being sold today.
And there are PC makers that are still copying the style.
Right. Exactly.
No, it's a really nice design.
So I think that like ostensibly what we were going to talk about here is what we'd like to see in the 13-inch MacBook that's rumored to be coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would like to see is a less expensive, reasonably powerful, more RAM device.
Like a reasonable list of requests. All right. So how would you feel if this rumored 13-inch computer was still a MacBook Air? So has a new screen, very likely Retina, because at this point, I can't imagine Apple having a new laptop come out that does not have a Retina screen.
Yeah, but does that mean that Apple... What does it take for Apple to have, you know, a sub-$1,000 laptop?
That's a good question. And can they do a Retina screen in a sub-$1,000 laptop?
I doubt.
PC makers are doing it. So
yeah, but they're not as thin.
Right. But the point is that you can, if you want, put a Retina display into a sub-$1,000 laptop. So then it's up to Apple to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, if you're willing to make other compromises. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things about even the original MacBook Air, or the old MacBook Air, not the original one. The, you know, the unibody design, the aluminum frame, the fit and finish on that thing. I mean, there's a lot that is in fact glorious. And for a long time, you know, Apple did have the 11-inch MacBook Air that was at $799.
Yep. All right. So here's a display question that I have. If Apple can put a 13-inch display in a tablet that also has touch sensitivity and the whole computer built into the into this whole little slab of glass, why would they need to make a MacBook Air thicker to put a Retina display in without touch?
Well, the display on an iPad Pro has a really high and expensive pixel density.
Mm-hmm.
So higher than the MacBooks.
Right. So you could go with a lower pixel density, but still have Retina quality. You don't have the touch layer. So now we've cut down the price from two angles. And
it doesn't have to be so thin.
Right, but my point is, with the form factor that we currently have with a MacBook Air, I bet Apple could put a Retina display into that, and the computer would not be any thicker.
Yeah, you would think that after so many years that might in fact be the case. That would be great. You know, if Apple could do a 13-inch MacBook Air, like at $1,199.
I'd still like to see it at $999.
I'd like to see it at $999 too. I think that a Retina display Mac portable under $1,000 would, or even at $1,000 would sell.
I agree. And so what I would love to see in that computer is the 13-inch Retina display, force sensitive trackpad, mm-hmm. dual USB-C ports, so one on mm-hmm. either side.
Yep.
Headphone jack out.
Yep. MagSafe. I know it's not coming back. I just want it. That was a step back. Just saying it's a step back, but fine. USB-C, great.
Yep. So dual USB-C ports, backlit keyboard.
Yep.
And
doesn't need the touch bar because touch bar is going away.
Right. Yeah. Touch bar is not even part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. I have accepted that I have the Anomaly Book Pro because it's the one that has the touch bar. So it's the Anomaly. Right. And I like how that rolls off your tongue.
8 or 16 gigs of RAM.
Yes.
Preferably 16, to be honest. But the current MacBook starts, actually, can you get, let's see if I can put 16 gigs. Can I put 16? Yeah, I can put 16 gigs in the current one. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, eight is increasingly feeling like not enough as a starter.
I agree.
But if we're going to be at $999, it probably needs to be.
Right. Yep. And
256 gigs of storage as a starter is fine.
Yep. The Intel HD graphics would be fine on a computer like this.
Yeah. It needs to have, in my opinion, dual core is no longer acceptable. I think we need to be at four core. Doesn't even have to be all that fast at four core, but it should be four cores.
It should be, but I could see dual core to keep the price lower. Look at the MacBook. It's a dual core machine.
But how much of that is because Apple insisted it be so thin? How much of that is because that thinness can't cool off a four core device?
I think a lot of it's about price.
I think a lot of it's form factor. I think form factor is driving that decision, just like it drove the decision to have the limitations that were on the MacBook Pros you have.
Yep, it's totally possible. But I think price is playing a role in this too. Because they can do the cool dual core processors for a lower price. It's also an artificial, it doesn't have to be an artificial, but it's a differentiator between the standard MacBook and the MacBook Pro.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. What's the next generation of mobile processors? Is that Coffee Lake? No, it's not Coffee Lake. What's coming out? Kaby Lake? What's coming out?
After Kaby Lake? Crater Lake?
Yeah.
Crater. I think it's,
No, it's not Crater.
That's what I'm going with, because I like how it sounds, Crater Lake. I don't remember, but it has a lot of potential for the mobile space. I don't know if it's going to be out in time for a fall Mac laptop update.
Intel announces next generation Ice Lake.
Ice Lake. Let's see, Crater Lake. There's ice.
Is that really? Is that the one that's coming out? Is that what we're expecting later this year in a MacBook Pro?
I'm not. I would be surprised if Apple switched from the Kaby Lake processor.
Oh, no. Coffee Lake is coming up. Coffee Lake is coming up. Coffee Lake is next.
Okay.
But Ice Lake is at some point.
Well, nonetheless, I don't expect to see that in an Apple laptop this year.
I bet we see that. I bet we see it in a pro this year.
I'd be surprised. I can see it happen next year. Part of my surprise would be because Intel has a proven track record of not being able to get the volume out right away. So their processors trickle out at first, and then a few months later, they've been able to ramp up production, and then it's a lot easier for device makers to roll with it. So I think that will play a part in Apple not moving beyond Kaby Lake in their laptops this year.
Yeah, and I think it'll happen this year. So there.
All right.
So anyway, that's going to change that the next generation of Intel processors is going to change some of what we might expect on the Pro line, at least. Like I said, dual core increasingly feels not good enough. And this Core M3, good Lord, frickin' M3, 1.2 gigahertz. I mean, that's just, I don't know. That's appalling. So 13 inch, I would love to see a better processor and some all day battery life.
Yeah.
Which means it doesn't need to be paper thin.
And the MacBook Air still has the longest battery life. So that's rated at, I think it's like 12 hours.
Is it?
I think so. So that beats everything else, which is at like 10 hours.
And that's a nice long time. It's definitely, that's lovely. I know that someday we'll laugh about that, but for now, that's lovely.
Yeah. With current battery technology, you give me 12 hours life on a laptop and you are working magic.
Yep. Give me six to eight hours and I'm super stoked.
Yeah.
I'm not hauling around a power brick with me.
Right.
I have 4 to 6 hours, actually. I'm probably not hauling a power brick.
I am, probably. But that's how I roll.
Yep. Okay, so anyway, there you have it. That's sort of our wish list. I don't know. I really don't know what we're going to see on this. I really don't know if it's going to be a 13-inch addition to the MacBook. I don't know if that means, if it is, whether or not the MacBook Air will still be sold. We don't know if the Retina display is going to be brought down to the MacBook Air line. There's a lot we don't know. I'm hoping, I actually would love it if this was an updated MacBook Air. That's what I'd like to see.
Well, the Retina display is already in the MacBook line. So the only laptop that doesn't have it is the MacBook Air.
Right. A 13-inch MacBook Air.
Yeah.
Starting starting at $9.99 or even less if it can be done, that would be, I think that would be a terrific boost to the Mac product line.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, holy crap.
Yeah, I would buy that.
4.2.
I don't think I would buy the MacBook, the current MacBook. I wouldn't buy it. Actually, I know that I wouldn't buy it. I would spend more money and get a 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Sure.
If I would not spend new money on the MacBook Air that exists today, even though it had a pseudo processor boost last year.
Yeah, but give me a nice upgrade this fall with Retina display and a better processor.
Yeah, I'd get that instead of a MacBook Pro. And maybe, of course, Apple doesn't want that. But the reality, too, is that I would get it a lot sooner than I would be able to get a MacBook Pro. So, you know.
Yeah. No, I get it. All right. So it sounds to me like what we both want is a nice refresh to the MacBook Air that makes it a modern computer, even if they don't call it a MacBook Air. That's what we would like to see.
Yep. That's it in a nutshell.
All right. Well, now that we've solved this marketing issue for Apple, what do we have next on our list?
Next on our list is, I think we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, Bitcoin.
Yes, please. So let's start with the easy thing. And can you explain to me why people are like flipping out about Bitcoin and the environment? Because we're talking about a virtual currency here.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good question. And there's a lot of confusion on that. So the issue, I think that what you're referring to is the electricity consumption.
That would probably be what I'm referring to. And I say that only because I see so many people flipping out about this, and no one is actually saying anything concrete. It's just like, oh, Bitcoin environment, blah, this is awful. Tear down forests instead. It's more environmentally friendly.
Yeah. So let me try to explain this. At issue is the sheer number of computers, specialized computers, whose only function in life is to mine Bitcoin. And what we mean by mining Bitcoin is doing the math necessary to ensure the integrity of the network. And in doing so, being rewarded with new Bitcoins that are created. That's essentially what mining is. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And the thing is, the more Bitcoin is worth, the more incentive people have to throw computers trying to get some computers at the job, trying to get some of those new Bitcoins. Does that make sense?
Yes. And so by extension, that means more computers, more electricity used.
Right. Now, Bitcoin is so clever in so many ways in the way that it's been set up and the way it's been modified over the years. The whole idea is that there will be 21 million Bitcoins mined and created over a period of about 120 years, roughly.
Okay.
Okay. And those are released in blocks. And they're released as a reward for people using their computers to do math necessary to maintain the integrity, to check through all the encryption math that's needed to keep Bitcoin transactions legit.
All right. So then, so we know we're mining all these new coins now, and we have decades of mining ahead of us still.
Yes.
When the mining is done, does that mean that the electricity consumption to manage this whole system goes down dramatically?
Maybe, but probably not. Because at that point, and we're talking, 100 years from now, 110 years from now. The mining will still be rewarded with transaction fees.
Okay.
And the idea, of course, at that point is that the Bitcoin network and Bitcoin usage would be so high that that alone would be worth it for people to mine. And there's like sort of this self-correcting. There's several elements of this. One is that the network itself adjusts artificially the difficulty of the math needed to maintain its integrity. And okay. It does this so that all the Bitcoins don't get found all at once. Right? Like, you know, if the difficulty didn't get adjusted, if you threw enough computers at the task, it would just find all of the blocks.
And then you just suddenly have this Bitcoin glut because everything would be there.
Right. And people would not continue to mine. So the network adjusts itself artificially, again, this is very important, making the encryption math harder and harder as more computers are thrown into it. If computers were withdrawn from the task, it would self-adjust down and make the difficulty a little easier.
Okay.
But that doesn't happen, at least not currently.
Right. More people are adding computers all the time.
Right. And at this point, like I said, these computers are specialized computers. The days of being able to mine Bitcoin with your CPU on your Mac or your PC are long over. Even the days of being able to use your GPU, which is much, much faster than a CPU for some kinds of math, those days are gone too. So what Bitcoin mining today is done with chips that are called ASICs, a system on a chip, ASIC. Mm-hmm. And all they do is this math. It's the only thing they do. They check over this encryption. And what we have right now is like there's enough electricity being consumed to perpetuate and monitor and verify the Bitcoin network. I think it's like as much as like 56 or 58 countries.
Good God.
Like the bottom 58 countries, which admittedly, I mean, we're talking about sometimes tiny and then oftentimes, you know, third world countries that are not electricity based. So, you know, it's both awful and not as awful as it might necessarily sound, but it's a lot of electricity. And that electricity, of course, you know, since a lot of it's done in China, a lot of that electricity is being generated by coal. That's not good.
No, that's not good.
So some cryptocurrencies have tackled this by using what's called a proof of stake system instead of the proof of work system that Bitcoin is.
Okay, so explain that to me because I do not know the difference.
Proof of work. So when a new block is found, it goes to the block is awarded to the computer that did the work. And then the way it works now is actually computers pool together. So, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of these mining systems, these mining rigs have been all pulling together. And from the network standpoint, you know, 10,000 computers are basically seen as one. Mm-hmm. And the award goes to the computer that can prove that it did the work. So proof of work.
Okay.
There's another system called proof of stake. And instead of having this scaling system that's based on the work that's being done, you instead have computers designed to do this math. And sometimes actually now we're talking about regular computers again. And the award gets randomly given to a computer that can prove that it has X amount of the cryptocurrency.
Okay, so if you have more of the cryptocurrency, you have a higher likelihood of getting awarded even more.
Yeah, each system is a little bit differently. Dash is one that uses a proof of stake system. It's called Dashcoin. And if you can operate what's called a node, full node, if you have 1,000 Dash, which let me get current price of Dash. It's usually 863. And it is down to 766 right now. Dash is down. So, you know, $766,000 worth of Dash would allow you to operate a node, and then you'd be in the running to get new blocks as your computer is doing math.
You know, the whole thing with cryptocurrencies, I'm finding it absolutely fascinating. But in the back of my mind, my horse pucky alarm keeps going off. Like, is this ultimately just going to be some scam because people are like, I invented new currency, and other people start investing in it, and now you get to make a lot of money because you invented Brian Bucks, and you take the money that people invested and you run.
Yeah, that has happened. That has happened several times. There are hundreds of cryptocurrencies there, and the vast majority of them are junk. And a lot of them are scams, and a lot of them were intended as scams. So, like, one thing, I don't know how deep we want to get into this, but one of the things that was done in the early days of new Bitcoin clones being created was that someone would announce a cryptocurrency but they would pre-mine a huge chunk of the coins that were intended to be part of this new cryptocurrency. And then people would get all excited about it and they'd start trading it. And then the people that pre-mined that had all this pre-mine stuff, they would sell theirs and they're done. They're gone. It's a scam the whole time.
Okay, so pre-mining in that sense would be they just say, we already have X amount of this currency. Now you guys start mining to make more of it. And
yes.
Then is the value is
yeah,
is
we're gonna hype it up and get the value up through hype. And then we're gonna sell ours and then we're gone.
Man.
So, yeah, that's been done, but pre-mining isn't necessarily bad. There's a cryptocurrency called Cardano, Cardano ADA, that is, I'm personally extremely interested in ADA, extremely interested in it. And it's because it's a cryptocurrency that's designed for business in many ways. So one of the things that it supports is smart contracts. So this is basically you and I can have an agreement that has triggers and whatnot, and it's part of the blockchain, and it's, you know, therefore, you know, like we're locked into it and it's provable, and every, you know, like we could have terms, we could make a bet and have it be part of the blockchain, or we can have a business agreement that where I'm going to pay you X amount of Cardano ADA, and when certain conditions are met, that ADA will be released to you, and I couldn't possibly rip you off.
Interesting. Okay.
And ADA is doing another really interesting thing too, where they have allowed the separation of metadata from the transaction data, and this is an important segment. This is an important step for keeping the network from becoming congested, which is the thing that's affected both Ethereum and Bitcoin lately, is when there's only so many transactions that the networks are currently designed to handle, and more than that limit, everything slows down and gets more expensive.
Okay.
So by separating the metadata from transaction data, you can actually keep the network leaner and cleaner and faster, and that's super important. Now, Cardano ADA is a pre-mined, it's an entirely pre-mined cryptocurrency, but everybody knows this going into it.
Okay.
And the group behind it is everything is being peer reviewed before it becomes part of the platform. They've got a lot of scholars, they've got a lot of mathematicians. They're being super transparent about a lot of different things. And I think that that this is one of the altcoins that could well have a future. And I do own a few, but that's not influencing why I'm saying that. It's the other way around. The reason why I believe in this cryptocurrency, so I own a few.
All right. So if I wanted to create my own scam currency, that's like Atto, then what I need to do is get all my friends together. They become the peer reviews and then say that they,
yeah, you could do that. That's not that, in this particular case, it's actually going through the halls of academia.
Okay. And
so, I mean, like
I'm just trying to figure out how you and I can make some serious cash quick with cryptocurrency.
You and I can't. You do still need to know some math, and you still need to know some programming, and there are things that you need to be able to do. There are still scam currencies out there, and bizarrely, there are cryptocurrencies that have been announced that I'm not going to name any names because I can't. I haven't. I know that these exist, but I don't know enough about them to call any names. But they've been announced. And all they have is a website and like a white paper or two, and like they'll have a market cap of $78 million, and that's crazy.
That's insane.
And yeah, I was reading a story about one, and again I can't remember which one it is, but one cryptocurrency that had a fairly significant market cap. I think maybe in the hundreds of millions, and they don't understand it. It's like, you know, we're at the beginning of stages of this. Why are we being traded so high? Like, you know, they're not trying to, you know, theoretically at least, they're not trying to scam anybody over, but there's just so much interest in cryptocurrencies, and a lot of dumb money is being put into a lot of them.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So like, if you're going to invest in any cryptocurrency, you need to read, you need to know what you're doing, and you need to know about the exchange you're putting your money into. You need to understand the wallets. You need to know what you're doing if you're risking money that you care about.
That seems like really good advice.
Yeah, it's extremely important advice in my not at all humble opinion.
All right, so I've been thinking a little bit more about Brian Bucks.
can we call it Jeff Bucks? BJ Bucks. a whole new demographic.
All right, so BJ Bucks. Uh-huh. and a fraction of a BJ Buck is called a pedant.
Okay. All right, I like it.
And so we need a white paper. We need to find someone that can do the math for us. So we make.
Yeah, sure we need to find someone right. That can actually just copy work that someone else has done. That's
right.
That's really what. But with our own branding on it.
Right. Okay. Great. This is going to be great.
Exactly. And this is possible. That's why, like I say, you need to know what you're doing. You need to research. You need to read. You need to get involved in the communities and figure out what's what before you just throw your money into something.
Yeah, my guess is that there's a lot of people that are getting scammed every day.
Absolutely, that's for sure. And we could be in the midst of a major bubble. And that's the thing. Like Bitcoin is down to what's Bitcoin at right now? Bitcoin is down to $1,128 on GDAX. GDAX is Coinbase's trading platform, and that is down from a high of 19,750, I think, from in December. And it is up from November. Like, they get crossed the 10,000 mark going up for the first time in November. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we could still be in the midst of a huge bubble, or we could be at the foot of a very tall mountain.
All right.
And we don't. No, and there is a lot of hype on a lot of the cryptocurrencies, the altcoins, mm-hmm. And most of them are never going to amount to anything. Some of them will. There's room for multiple cryptocurrencies. Cryptocurrencies do solve some things. They do solve problems. Blockchains solve problems, give us new capabilities. Smart contracts have an enormous amount of potential to radically transform the way we do business.
I like the idea of smart contracts. I'm assuming that set up correctly, it makes it a lot harder for either party to scam the other.
Yeah. So like one of the things I love about Bitcoin is that it's designed to be trustless. And what that means is it's designed so that you don't have to trust anybody to send somebody value. Mm-hmm. And think about that. I mean, like that. Think about how important that is, right? Like, when I say you don't have to trust anybody, it's because nobody can actually rip you off. You can only make a mistake yourself.
All right, that's a pretty powerful statement,
right? You're not worrying about a banker being corrupt. You're not worried about a banker breaking the law. You're not worried about a bank becoming insolvent and you losing your money. Right, you're not worried about some person making a mistake and sending your money to the wrong place. Right, it's trustless. You don't have to trust anybody. And smart contracts can be set up on a blockchain so that you don't have to trust anybody. That could be huge. Imagine if I can't remember if I've mentioned this version for you, but imagine if land titles were on a blockchain instead of written down on paper. So that at any given time, anybody could go see who owned what property. So I'll use an example. Housing here in Silicon Valley is insanely expensive. Mm-hmm. And I have friends who recently bought a home. They had to pay $9,500 to buy insurance that protects everybody in case someone shows up 4 years from now with a title that means that they actually own this house.
Right. Which does happen.
It doesn't really happen, but it could. Because
you see it on the news every now and then, someone buys a house and then finds out that someone else holds the title. They're living in a house that they suddenly get kicked out of and they're out literally hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right. Or, you know, sometimes it might be that, you know, somebody doing some digging found a title that supersedes what everybody else thought was the title. Mm-hmm. Right. So imagine if titles were on a blockchain, right? You wouldn't have to pay $9,500 for insurance. $10,000. $10,000 that goes to an insurance policy, you know, to cover the case of some paperwork being done wrong some point in the last 150 years, 200 years, whatever. That's so much money.
Yeah, it's whoever has that insurance company. They're probably making money hand over fist.
Yeah, probably. Probably doing pretty well. But if titles were on a blockchain, you might still possibly need that insurance, but it'd
be now $200. You
know, $200 or $90 or $5. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, you wouldn't like you could go and check, right? You go and check the record. The record is there. It's a blockchain. It's publicly accessible. It's transparent. It's provable, it's verifiable, and it's done.
Actually, you wouldn't need insurance. What you'd be paying is the $25 blockchain verification fee, where the experts that know how to look at everything correctly.
Well, yeah, and you should be able to do it from a web interface, really.
Of course.
Yeah, and we will probably have this someday. The same thing with like car titles. Your medical records could be on a blockchain to where it's being stored in an encrypted safe way, and the only people that can access it are you and whoever you give guest credentials to. That's a doable thing. Encyclopedias could be stored on a blockchain.
We already have Wikipedia.
Yeah, we do have Wikipedia on servers, sure. But if it was on a blockchain, and I would actually think that this is something Wikipedia itself would embrace, because it would, you know, potentially turn the information even more democratically accessible.
Mm-hmm. By the way, my Wikipedia joke sounded a lot funnier in my head.
See,
you don't even get it. That's how bad the joke was.
So all of my point here is that there are problems that cryptocurrencies solve. Another thing the cryptocurrency can solve, Bitcoin doesn't do it the way it's set up right now, although there are changes, there are new technologies being developed for Bitcoin that could change this. But you take a coin like Dogecoin, mm-hmm. which was originally a joke. It was set up like someone thought it would be LOL funny to set up a cryptocurrency based on the Doge meme.
Mm-hmm.
And people just fell in love with it. And it has become a fairly important cryptocurrency. It's one of the cryptocurrencies that continues to have value. And the reason why it does is because it's fast. So I could send you Dogecoin, and in 10 minutes, you've got those Dogecoin, and it's done.
Much money.
So exactly. And Dogecoin is so fast, and it's inexpensive it doesn't cost much to send Doge across the network. And being able to send money across the planet to someone and have it be completely finalized. So like, for instance, I can send you money through PayPal and you have it instantly. Mm-hmm. But in reality, that money actually takes days to officially change hands behind the scenes. PayPal has done a lot to make it look easy and instantaneous to us. Same thing with Apple Pay Cash.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, there's stuff happening behind the scenes that takes a long time to actually be done.
And
cryptocurrencies.
With PayPal, your transaction that completed 2 days ago could get reversed.
Yes.
And then you're just suddenly out.
Of course, you know, there's two sides of that too, right? Because sometimes people are ripping you off and it's very legitimate to have your money reversed. But sometimes the person who's buying and sending you money is the person who's ripping you off. And yeah, that happens all the time. I read all sorts of horror stories constantly about people on eBay being ripped off because the seller is able to reverse the charges, or the buyer is able to reverse the charges.
So then the buyer has the product and the money.
Right, exactly. And that's a problem.
That's a problem.
That's a problem. So on the one hand, cryptocurrency transactions are irrevocable once they happen, which also includes, by the way, if you send your cryptocurrency to the wrong address, it's gone unless you can somehow track down that person and somehow ask them to give you their money back, and they somehow, for some reason, agree to do it.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Right, but the flip side is that you know, you've got the other side of that, where the transaction is open, it's transparent, it's done, it's fast, it's now, it's complete, and you know, it's trustless, and you know, there is value in that.
All right,
and so, it's something that a blockchain and cryptocurrency brings to humanity.
All right, so maybe some of the concerns people are having about the environment, you know, just to bring it back full circle, mm-hmm. are concerns that they may not need to have, because
I don't know about that. It is an issue. How much electricity is being consumed for Bitcoin? That is an issue, and I don't know what the solution is.
More efficient hardware.
Because now you just have more of that.
Yeah, that's true.
More efficient hardware means that now other people can buy that more efficient hardware too.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right. The limitation is in how much people, how many mining rigs can be produced, and how much are people willing to pay for it. That's the limitation.
All right. So, so maybe the solution.
China is in the process of kicking mining operations out of China, by the way, but there are other countries that they can go in.
Oh, wow.
For instance, Iceland has got a lot of mining happening because in part because it's cold enough that it people can save money on cooling.
Oh, sure. They just let the environment cool the server rooms.
Or at least help.
Yeah.
And also because Iceland does subsidize electricity.
All right. So it sounds to me like the real fix is getting all of this gear on renewable energy.
That would, yeah, yeah, that would, that, yes. But even still, you're still talking about the cost of producing that energy and the fact that it's going to mining and not going to, you know, otherwise making people's lives better.
Yeah. All right. Well, so much for me finding a off the cuff easy fix.
it is not simple. Proof of stake is probably a better long-term solution to this. Because with proof of stake, you don't have to artificially increase the math requiring more and more and more hardware that results in math being artificially increased, resulting in more hardware, you know, in this vicious cycle of ever-escalating costs.
Yeah. All right. Well, I feel like I am slowly through these wonderful tutorials you give me, getting a much better handle on Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies.
Sweet.
And I'm looking forward to BJ Bucks.
I'm not. I would never do that.
And but come on. I mean, a fraction of a BJ Buck is a pedant. That's just awesome.
Yeah, yes, it is awesome. But of course, you're talking about scamming people. So no, that's not awesome.
No, we wouldn't scam people. I've moved beyond that. This is going. Oh, to
you
be,
moved beyond that now. Now yeah. We're actually creating we're doing like our version of Dogecoin.
Yeah,
I see.
It's going to be great.
BJ
people,
Bucks.
People are going to love this.
Yeah, I'm surprised there's not. Actually, there could be a BJ Bucks.
Oh well, I know what you'll be Googling as soon as we're done.
I'm Googling it now. BJ. Nope. There is no cryptocurrency that uses BJ as its first two initials.
Well, the awesome thing is now that you've done that search, you're going to have some really great ads showing.
Oh,
up.
No. I searched on coinmarketcap.com, which tracks all of the cryptocurrencies. I did not search on Google.
Okay. Well, drat.
Right. What's our time here?
We're at an hour and 3 minutes.
Are you serious? We only did two topics.
I know, but they were deep topics.
They were, in fact, deep topics. All right. Well, we want to thank everybody for joining us. Make sure you head over to facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. Mm-hmm. And I bet you now you're going to wonder what that third topic was.
Yeah. Well, let us know what you think the third topic is.
We'll probably save it for next week, or maybe we'll talk about it on TDO.
We just might. But still, tell us what you think the topic is. See, Brian, what I'm doing is I'm tricking them into giving us topics for next week.
Oh, I see. Right. Know. Right. Yeah, don't tell anybody.
Shh.
Don't tell anybody. Yeah, I can't wait to see what people think that third topic was today.
I know. It's going to be great. So let us know. Facebook.com/group/contextmachine.
Yep. Or you can hit us on Twitter at contextmachine.
Yes. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add or question, almost ran out of breath there, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Breathing is the new...
Breathing.
Breathing.
Yeah.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. We want to thank CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us, and that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.